remercier Josh Baron, qui est le vice-président adjoint pour les technologies de l'information et de la communication pour l'éducation d'Amérique au Marist College à Poughkeepsie, aux États-Unis. Et il va vous présenter un exposé qui va vous donner un panorama de la situation des Learning Analytics aux États-Unis. So please, Josh.
Bonjour. Je parle français. That is unfortunately the only part of my presentation that will be in French. And I sincerely apologize for needing to continue in English, and I will attempt to speak slowly so everybody can understand. As Anne has mentioned, Anne and the Ministry of Education for inviting me to speak to everybody this morning, for organizing this event. And I also want to thank all of you for coming out. I'm sure you all have busy schedules, and I appreciate you taking the day to spend talking about learning analytics. As Anne has mentioned, my name is Josh Baron. I'm the Assistant Vice President for Information Technology for Digital Education at Marist College. Since I've assumed folks don't know Poughkeepsie, New York very well, I have a map here. Poughkeepsie is located about 2 hours north of New York City along the Hudson River, and I'd like to invite anybody who happens to be traveling to the States to come and visit with us as well if you have the time. In the time I have this morning, I'm going to start off by giving a very kind of a broad introduction to why analytics and learning analytics specifically is such a major topic and area of focus in the United States today. Talk a little bit about how we define learning analytics and how it's being used again broadly in the States. I'll then share four different categories or types of learning analytics applications that are prevalent in the United States and share a little bit about the impact they're having and how they're being used. And I'll wrap up with talking and sharing some strategic implication or implementation considerations that I think are very important when you begin to deploy learning analytics at your institutions. And if I stick to my time, I should have about 5 minutes at the end for questions and answers. So I think I can answer this question about why big data and learning analytics is so important strategically in the United States today with one number, 39%. In the United States, only 39% of the students who begin four-year bachelor degree programs, which I believe are equivalent to the license degrees here in France, only 39% complete those degrees in 4 years. So less than half our students complete their programs in the time that they're kind of supposed to, and many of them end up not completing at all. This is a huge crisis and major challenge for higher education institutions in the United States, but it's also now become a national crisis. And to give you an example of why that's occurring, you go back 15 or 20 years ago, the United States was ranked number one or two internationally in educational attainment, the number of our citizens who had some exposure and some experience with higher education. Today, we are ranked 11th internationally in the percentage of 25 to 34-year-olds who have at least some higher education experience. And when I was getting ready for this presentation, I was glad to see that France is ranked higher than we are. So this is a major crisis for us in terms of trying to compete in the global economy today and a workforce where at least some higher education experience is becoming very important for employment. Another example, and there's many, and I'll just share these two, of why learning analytics is so important for us is around student loan debt. As many of you may know, in the United States, many students need to take out loans in order to pay for their college tuition. I personally think that France is a better model here, but that's a different presentation and topic. And as you can see, the debt that students are incurring is increasing tremendously. When a student drops out and doesn't complete their degree program, it becomes very hard for them to pay back those loans. And that's just another reason why this issue of graduation rates and degree completion is such a challenge in the United States. So how can learning analytics help us address this challenge? So I think on a very fundamental level, the ability to predict the future and make a prediction at some reasonable high level of accuracy gives us this really awesome potential to intervene in that future outcome and change the future. And to me, when you think about helping students complete their courses and degree programs, this ability is really, really powerful. And I think why fundamentally the US has gotten very focused on it. So in the United States, there's, I think, two broad applications of analytics taking place right now. One we often refer to as academic analytics. This really has to do about using big data and business intelligence tools to improve the business of running colleges and universities. So it's really about financial decision making. It's used by executives at our institutions, provosts, chancellors, to really look at revenue coming to the college, tuition dollars, and so forth. The other broad category, of course, is learning analytics. And this is, again, using that same big data and business intelligence tools, but now focused on improving learning outcomes, the learning environment, and our students' learning experience. This tends to be, obviously, more used by instructors, tutors, and students, and is obviously the focus of the rest of what I'll share with everyone. It was the slide you had about Gardner relates to this as well. And so in the United States, I've observed kind of an evolution in how institutions have been using analytics over the last 10 or so years. I think in the past, many institutions in the United States were doing what I might call reporting analytics. So using spreadsheets, looking at historical trends, maybe looking at grades in a course over a couple of years to understand how the course is going. Today, I think most institutions have evolved from that into what I often refer to as automated analytics. So taking big data and business intelligence tools and automating much of the prior work so that now you can get results in much more real time. This can be presented to decision makers through dashboards and technologies of that nature so they can take action very quickly on the results of the analytics. The future, and I think there are institutions now beginning to get to this last level, is really around predictive analytics. And the differentiator here is that in predictive analytics, we really focus on using large amounts of historical data. That's the big data that people talk about. We use sophisticated machine learning algorithms to mine that data, looking for hidden patterns, patterns often that human beings would not easily find themselves. Those patterns form the basis of predictive models, and those predictive models are what then allow us to make those predictions about the future at a high level of accuracy. Maybe at the end of my talk, I'll pass around a paper that I co-chaired a working group with EDUCAUSE recently on this area of predictive analytics. So broadly speaking, I kind of see four large categories of analytics applications, learning analytics applications being used in the United States today. There is overlap between these categories and some usage falls out of them, but I think it's helpful as a framework to understand some of the uses in the US. So I'll briefly now touch on early alert systems, student advising intervention systems, data visualization and adaptive learning systems, and I'll try to give you some concrete examples of these as well. So academic early alert systems, I think, are really designed to help identify students who are at risk to not complete a course or a program. The results of these are often, as you might see from the diagrams here, pushed out or provided to instructors and students to take action on. So once a student's identified as being at risk to not complete a class, then that instructor is notified and they can follow up to address that. There's a lot of research that's shown that this kind of technology can have a significant impact in improving course completion and degree completion in students in the United States. And a little bit later this morning, I'll share some research from Marist College has conducted that provides evidence of that. I think across all of the categories, early alert systems are the most prevalent at the moment in higher education in the United States. And I think many predict that in the next just few years, this will become a very mainstream technology, meaning most universities and colleges in the United States will be using some form of academic early alert systems. I think there's two fundamental approaches that have been taken in developing and deploying early alert systems, and I think it's very helpful to understand the pros and cons between the two. One I often refer to as the rule-based approach. In this kind of scenario, a user such as an instructor or a dean, sometimes an academic advisor, sets a rule upon which an alert is generated. So for example, they might say if a student doesn't come to class a certain number of times, an alert should be generated so that someone can follow up with them. These are based on anecdotal evidence in most cases, observing that students who don't come to class tend to not do as well. They're relatively simple to set up because you're basically just putting a rule in, but they're limited in terms of the complexity of the predictions they're going to make. The other approach is a model-based approach. This goes back to my comments about predictive learning analytics, because this really takes that approach of putting together large amounts of historical data, mining that data, finding patterns. Those patterns form the basis of the predictive model, and it's the predictive model which is then generating the alert. These tend to be a bit more complex to set up, but I think are much more sophisticated in the types of predictions that can be made from those models. Second category is advising and intervention systems. These often go hand in hand with academic early alert systems. These systems are designed to help advisors, tutors, instructors intervene and support students who are identified as being at risk. And there's generally integration, so the alert coming out of the academic early alert system will flow automatically into the intervention system, notify someone to follow up, and then recommend to that person how to best help that particular student. A support that works well for a young student, an 18, 19-year-old student, might not be the best intervention for an adult student. And so these systems help determine what the best intervention is. These are commonly used in junior or community colleges, two-year colleges in the United States, although they're starting to be adopted more broadly now in four-year colleges and research institutions. The combination of early alert systems and advising systems are also being used to address what we sometimes refer to as the cost of attrition. And so in the United States, we look at how many dollars do we lose every time a student drops out of our college or their degree program. And I've shared here a rough calculation we've done recently at Marist College that found that if we increase the graduation rate by just 2%, we'll find a cost savings of $1.5 million US, which obviously we then can feed back into helping improve our programs and helping support students. So even a small improvement in graduation rates can result in a large cost savings for colleges and universities. There's a report there that I've referenced that provides some very useful equations for calculating these numbers. Third category is data visualization. And here what we're trying to do is use sophisticated visualization tools to take what might be a very complex set of data that would take a human being a very long time to really understand and distill meaning from, and now through a visualization allow instructors and advisors and deans and so forth to quickly understand and get a real meaning of the information. They generally get pushed out to dashboards for users to see. There's a picture there of such a visualization, one that we're working on with the JISC in the UK. Again, these visualizations can be challenging to generate, but save a great amount of time. And I'll show you a quick example here of a tool called SNAP. It's a Social Network Analysis and Pedagogical Practices tool. I think they came up with the acronym SNAP first and then figured out the name for it. But let me switch over and see if I can show you a brief video, just 1 minute clip here of how this tool works. Skipped all the way to the end. One second.
SNAP, which stands for Social Network Analysis and Pedagogical Practices. It is used to easily analyze discussion forums in Sakai. In this forum, we can see multiple users interacting with one another, but unless we read the whole forum, we don't know who is leading the conversation and who has just replied once. SNAP allows the professor to know these intricate details about the forum with a very easy to follow.
So if you've ever participated in a large online discussion, you know that there can be hundreds of postings, replies back and forth between people. It can be very time consuming for an instructor to figure out who is the most influential person in this discussion this week. Who posted the most? Who posted the least? And this visualization tool provides that information very easily for instructors.
Visual interpretation. SNAP performs a web crawl on a Sakai forum thread and creates a network interaction graph among the participants. The nodes of the graph represent the participants in the forum. The interaction between them are represented as the directed edges of the graph. There are a number of force-directed graph layout options provided, which helps.
So as you can see, the large circles or nodes represent those who participated very actively in the conversation. Not just the number of posts they made, but the number of people who replied back to their posts, which is an indication that they were very influential in this discussion. Whereas you can see the circles, small circles out on the edges, are students who really did not engage in this discussion very much at all. This might take an instructor several hours to determine reading through all of them, but you can see in just under a minute, you can determine that by looking at the visualization. Last category, which I'm really very interested in professionally, I think it's a very emerging category, is this adaptive learning system, sometimes referred to as cognitive tutoring systems. And these really are designed to provide a personalized learning experience for students. And they can adjust the learning experience based on how the student is engaging in the learning process themselves. These tend to rely on what sometimes are called knowledge maps. These are kind of maps of a whole discipline that really look at all the prerequisite knowledge that a student needs to, let's say, solve a problem. To give you a concrete example, if you can think of a linear algebra equation, we can map out all the mathematical knowledge you would need to be able to solve that linear algebra equation. The software then presents students with problems, and it is able to then determine the gaps in their prerequisite knowledge, and those gaps are why they may not be able to solve the problem. It can then provide additional tutoring around those gaps, fill those gaps in a sense, and it'll get to the student to a point where they can master the concept and be able to solve that problem. I think these have a huge opportunity to provide that very personalized learning experience that I think many of us in higher education are looking for our students. This technology, I think, is still in fairly early stages of development, and really right now works primarily with very basic skills, but I think many see in the next 4 to 5 years, this technology will also become quite mainstream. Give you one example and some evidence here. Arizona State University has been doing a lot of work with this software. They're using a product called Newton. And they've adopted it in what's called the Math Emporium model, which you may be familiar with. The concept here is that rather than having students go to a large math lecture, which is how Arizona State had been providing math instruction, they don't do any lecturing anymore. Instead, students go to a large computer lab. They use this kind of adaptive learning system technology to develop their math, their particularly basic math skills. There are tutors and instructors in the lab who can help if there's a need for a human being to intervene and provide assistance. And it may be hard to see some of the results here, but they found that it has increased the number of students who've passed the introductory math courses, reduced the number of students withdrawing from those classes, and I think most significantly possibly is the last point here, which is 45% of the students mastered these concepts in less time than the traditional lecture course would have taken. And I think if you want to look at technologies for me that combine improving learning outcomes with reducing cost, to me that's kind of the ultimate technology that can do both. I think adaptive learning systems represent potentially a technology that can do that for us. So let me conclude here with sharing some strategic considerations that I think become very important as institutions begin to deploy this kind of learning analytics technology. I'll touch on briefly, in the interest of time, these three categories, and then we'll take some questions here at the end. And I don't think that this is a recommendation specific to learning analytics. Anytime you're engaged in introducing a big new technology that's going to change how things happen, it's probably the case that you really need a senior champion, somebody at a senior level at the institution who's going to support this project. One of the aspects of implementing learning analytics is that it's not just an IT technology project. It's not just a teaching and learning project. It really touches on almost all dimensions of a college or university. So having somebody at the senior level who can really break down silos and make sure that people are working together is really important. Of course, you need champions at all levels, and so having faculty members, technology members, and I think most importantly students who often get left out of this work is really important to making sure you have a positive implementation of this kind of technology. And the last point there is around investing in new skills. As institutions move in and evolve to this predictive analytics level of use, skill sets such as data scientists become extremely important because of the complex machine learning and data mining processes that are necessary. Now, one of the advantages we have in higher education is that many of us have data scientists in our faculty doing research and teaching, and at Marist College, that's how we've benefited or been able to do this work, is engaging our computer science faculty members. But I think that skill set is something you need to be thinking about. Another challenge that often comes up is around access to learning data. And by learning data, I mean all the data that's produced as a student engages in the learning process. That might be data coming from the VLE or LMS library systems, or just their academic records associated with their achievements. This data becomes the fuel on which these learning analytics systems run. You can imagine if you had the most sophisticated, fancy car, but had no gas in the car, it would be somewhat useless. Or maybe in the future you had no battery in the car. And so if you can't get access to your learning data, you might have deployed a very sophisticated system, but it may not be very useful. And there are a number of implementation barriers that come up. For example, often the data that you're trying to work with wasn't initially designed for learning analytics. So later this morning, I'll share some of the work that we've done specifically at Marist, and a lot of what we use is event log data coming from the VLE or LMS. That data was designed for technical troubleshooting. And so we have to process that data in order to be able to use it for learning analytics. And that's a time-consuming and sometimes complex task. More and more institutions are moving their data into the cloud, and making sure that you can access your data when it's in the cloud, I think, becomes very important. I'll be very brief here so I can take some questions, but I I think, an extremely important topic, and Hendrik is here, will speak, I think, to this a little bit later today, is around ethics and privacy issues. Like all technologies, I think learning analytics is a good as well as evil side to it. To give you a concrete example, you can imagine that an instructor who might be using an early alert system over several years could become unconsciously biased towards certain students. If you notice that a certain type of student seems to always be getting alerts in your class, at the beginning of your next class, you might be biased towards those students. Those are ways of addressing those things, but you have to be conscious of that as you go into using this technology. Privacy also is a huge challenge and issue. We're dealing with confidential records in the States. These are often protected by federal laws. I believe there's a lot of EU regulations and laws, similar laws here in Europe. And so making sure that you have the proper data security protocols in place, I think, is very important. I'll leave that at there. There's CERF in the Netherlands and JISC in the UK, both of which you'll hear about later today, I think have some excellent documents that are publicly available to help better understand some of those topics. So with that, let me, I think I have just a few minutes here and I can take a few questions.
Thank you very much.
Josh, you spoke about adaptive learning. At EDUCALS, there are many conferences about that, and a number of them say that they didn't see any evidence of difference when using an adaptive platform and an ordinary platform in the same room like Azure uses. So, what is your belief? Does it mean that they don't take correct data, or what is it about?
Well, you know, I think the first thing I would say is that we are in very early days with this technology, and I think we're still trying to figure out how to really develop the technology and so forth. But my guess might be that in many of those cases, the technology may have been deployed, but the teaching learning process didn't change at all. And I think one of the things that I like about Arizona State University is that they use the technology in a way that really transformed the teaching and learning process. If you simply take that technology and tell students come to the lecture and then maybe use that adaptive learning software outside of class, I don't know that you would see the impact that they've had there. So that would be my guess as maybe one of the factors in that kind of evidence.
So you are just saying something very important. If you don't change the process of learning, learning and analytics are useless.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think it's...
Thank you.
If we just focus on automating, just using the technology to make things a little bit easier, but don't fundamentally change how students are learning, we're not going to see a big gain.
Josh, thanks for the presentation. Two questions. One is... you said about this amazing 45% increase in quicker finishing the math class. That's great evidence. If do you have a paper about that, what we could reference to? That's question one. And the question two also goes to the, I call it adaptive hypermedia. So actually we had this whole adaptive hypermedia discussion already in 2000. Peter Brusilovsky made a book on adaptive hypermedia, and now I see these things coming back like, yeah, adaptive systems. But there, I guess there's a difference between what we wrote about in 2000 and what's possible now, and also the idea of learning styles. You know, learning styles are really bad by things you should not mention, but I think data science gives us new opportunities for this. Could you say a few words about that?
Yeah, so I should have probably cited something there in the slides, an older slide, I'll admit, and so I'll follow up with a reference for that work. Yes, I think that we have seen this evolution of this technology, and as I've said, I think we're not at the end point, you know, with it. I think some of this has to do with the technology as maturing, so we have more powerful computers and machines and computing power, which is very important when engaging in this kind of work. I also think the development of knowledge maps has become much more sophisticated than it was maybe even just 5 years ago. I think that is a big differentiator between how the technology may have worked previously and some of the abilities today. As a side note, I'll say that it's also an area where I think openness is particularly important. If we don't begin to have knowledge maps that are licensed under open licenses that we can all share, I think we're going to have a digital divide again, where we have some students who get access to this kind of very powerful systems and some that don't. So I guess, you know, go back to your question, I think that we're still trying to figure out how this technology best works and is best deployed, and I think 4 or 5 years from now, I think we'll be where, let's say, some of the other learning analytics areas are today.
D'autres questions? N'hésitez pas à les poser en français si c'est...
Yeah, thank you. It works. I have a question about the cost, because to provide a running analytics system to our executive director, we need to talk about the cost. So do you have some issue about this subject?
Yes, I think there's, when you look at everything from the business intelligence tools that you often need to do this to the predictive models that are at the heart of these systems, they can be extremely expensive and costly, I think particularly those being offered by proprietary corporations. That's one of the reasons, and a little bit later you'll hear more about this, that myself and Ian Dolphin and Michael Webb, we were very focused on open source learning analytics. And I think that everything from using, all the work we've done at Marist has all been using open source business intelligence software and systems. And we were releasing our predictive models under an open license, free of cost, anybody to come and use. So I think that's one of the biggest ways of trying to reduce costs, as well as drive innovation, because then all of us in the higher ed can share the predictive models and the benefits from this technology.
Just an additional question about open system, but there is a cost for Marist, even using open analysis learning.
Sure, so you're probably familiar with
that. Our question for our institutions.
Probably familiar with the concept is open source is free as in a puppy. there's a cost to taking
there
care
a
of a puppy. And so by no means am I suggesting that deploying an open source learning analytics system is free of cost completely. There's technology, servers to install, people that need to run these. So I think it's a way of reducing cost.
Yes.
To me, the most valuable aspect of it, though, is the innovation that comes from it. The ability for, let's say, institutions in France to take a model that was developed in the United States and adapt and improve it for use here in France, I think creates an opportunity to innovate these predictive models, and then maybe we can share that back with institutions in the U.S. So to me, that's the really more valuable aspect of openness in this space, is the innovation. The side benefit is it reduces cost, but it certainly doesn't eliminate it. So I think institutions need to look at the benefits that come with this technology and do that cost-benefit analysis to make sure it's going to make sense for each institution.
Thank you very much for...